Hey.
Good morning.
Or afternoon or evening. I don't know, man. What's going on? My name is Brant Boersma. I am your host with my good friend Marcus Berryota, a.k.a. Mark Berry, a.k.a. Weapon X.
Ooh, yeah.
You like that one, huh?
Brian Dawkins. Mm.
You know what? We're kicking off a new year with a new style. So we're going to all start singing country.
There's a tear in my beer.
Mark, why don't you tell me a little bit about what is this? We do this thing called Trav Talk. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so basically every Thursday when he's available, Trav just likes to share what's on his heart or on his mind with everybody out at HQ. Broistas or basically anybody's welcome to attend them. But the messaging is just kind of for us just to open up, share. And a couple months ago, he just kind of decided that he really wanted to talk about the complete history of the beginning stages of Dutch Bros and how it all came about. So it's pretty cool. We got Trav's perspective of early Dutch Bros and and going from square one.
Out the gates.
Boom.
A lot of people maybe haven't heard about how we started, what has taken place over the course of years. So I thought I'd touch on it and just share some of the pieces of the journey to get here. I gotta tell you, for me, growing up on a farm, a dairy farm, was the coolest way that I could have ever imagined to grow up. I had so much freedom. My family was tight-knit, it was intimate. My mom was the hostess of the mostest. She was an unbelievable cook. She really just took great pride in being a strong woman that had her priority with her family and her kids in helping to teach us principles and values that at the time I didn't know would shape who I am as a man. And my dad, growing up on that dairy farm, it was a tough way of life. It was 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And, you know, holidays would happen, but you still had to milk cows. You still had to go lay out the hay. You still had to go clean stalls. There was never a day where it wasn't on. And there was stuff that broke, and there was tragic times where you lost cattle, and there was stuff that was pretty ugly and cost money. And the way of life with that dairy farm was rough. While it was so rewarding and I got to experience all the great parts as a kid, for my dad, it was probably quite stressful. The price of feed would be predicated on supply and weather conditions. You know, alfalfa, feeding the cows, grain, the price of those commodities fluctuated over time. And the most interesting part of the business for me was the government sets the price for milk. And it's based on supply and demand. So you could have years where feed costs were lower and milk prices were higher and you had great profits. And you could have years where feed costs were higher and milk prices were lower and you lost money. It was really volatile. I think in 1985, there was so much supply that the government stepped in and proposed a buyout program. And the buyout program, you could submit a bid that you would sell for, and they would buy all the cows, and I don't know what the heck they did with them. They either repurposed them and found new homes for them to still maintain their way of life, or they turned them into hamburger. But I remember the serious talks at that time that my family was having because there was no money and the work still had to be done. And the question was, well, would this buyout be good and then we'll make money again if we stay in and we don't sell out? And if we sell out, man, what are we gonna do? Because you couldn't dairy for 5 years. That was part of the agreement. And so if you were gonna put in a bid, what would that number be? All these decisions. I got to tell you, my mom, being the hostess of the mostest and taking care of the family as the priority and making sure that we had this great way of life, it was like, well, let's not sell. Let's not put in our bid. And I remember when the result came out, my dad's like, damn it, I should have put in the bid because it was way more than what we thought. And the guys who got out, they got all this money and it was like they didn't have to work anymore for 5 years. They had an opportunity to try and figure out what the heck they were gonna go do. And here we were like, well, shit, man, it's the same old thing. And the milk prices weren't that much better. And so my dad, I remember growing up on the farm, he'd buy and sell cars. He'd pick up like cheap cars. And I mean, they were like the ugliest cars you could imagine. Like a Ford Fairlane. And he'd pick it up for a couple $100 and he'd put it up on Upper River Road for sale for like 800 and he'd sell it for 5 or 6 and he would laugh about it and get the greatest joy out of that profitability in the transaction and go, yeah. And I thought that he just loved the game. I think he was doing it out of necessity to some extent. He made the decision to start a company with a friend that would really be a difference maker for him and my mom and us as kids. And he opened River City RV in 1986. And when he opened River City RV with his partner, Gene Inman, they had these ideas, we'll just sell some RVs and make some money. And hell, if it don't work, you know, I mean, he's got his dairy business and we just do what we do. And his partner got cancer. Times got tough again. It was rough right out of the chute. He was down there on the daily. And man, he was home late at night. It was working. And it started to get momentum going. He brought in a partner that just was super skilled with selling. And they became students of how to really do a lot of volume. And I got to see that from an outside perspective. And it was systematic. I mean, it was kind of hardcore. You know, and you guys maybe see my dad floating around right now. He's like 16 all over again. He didn't give a damn what anybody thinks. Still don't. And his system was, if you stepped onto the lot, you were a buyer. And the objective was, don't ever let anyone leave without an RV. So they'd use all sorts of tactics and have people stay and say, well, wait, let me introduce you to somebody. Let me go get them. You're going to be mind blown. We got something that we want to show you. In fact, we get it, whatever it was like always trying to figure out a way. Highly effective. And the dairy business was as brutal as it ever was. I'd go down, I'd help out, I'd milk cows, I'd BS with Dane. I was thinking, as a teenager, what am I gonna do in my life? Where am I gonna go? I had taken on this idea of buying and selling cars, and I was flipping Volkswagens. I could pick up a bug for $600-800, flip it for $1,200-1,500 all day. And I just would rock it. I think I sold 19 cars from the time I was 16 to the time I was 20. And I made great money on all of them. I never took a loss. And I'd observe the RV business, and I felt like, yeah, I could go down there and I could sell anything, man. And I saw how their system worked, but ultimately it didn't appear to be fulfilling to me. I'd talk with Dane about it, I'd talk about life, and you know, the system, it was, I cared more about people. Man, I had my idea, like, if you came down and you wanted to buy an RV from me, I had a different philosophy with it in my mind. And Dane and I would talk about and dream about what the dairy could be like. If only the milk prices could be great. If we could figure out a way to reduce cost with feed, then maybe we could actually profit more. And, you know, what if we had purebred Holstein cattle? And we really paid attention, and I went to school and I got a degree in nutrition, and we really rationed the feed to the cows, and we had a computer program to be able to decide based off of each cow's production how much feed they would get, and the ones that maybe were tapering off, you feed less, and the ones that are producing more, you feed more, and maybe they produce more, right? We figured a way to like go do that. And as technologically challenged as I am, at that time, I had an Apple II computer. And I was in computer programming 3 as a freshman in high school. And I didn't deserve to be there because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But those lessons, they were right around me in my life. And at that time for me, those life lessons, I got to watch what it was like to be a hardcore slit-throat salesman that operated within the confines of a system, and it was about the dollars. And I got to operate on a dairy farm where it was about family, and it was about a way of life that would be unique and different. And I got to visit with somebody who was my best friend on the daily and talk about what was possible without limitations. When those conversations took place, I really did fantasize about college. And I thought, man, if I graduated with a degree, I could be the first Boersman to ever graduate from college. It didn't happen, obviously. But my niece, Dana, Dane's oldest daughter, was. And I think about those times and the decisions that we made along the course of the way. There was a time, straight up, that I was going to be a pilot. And I did go to school. I went to school at RCC for a year, and I went to Southern Oregon State College for a year before it was SOU. I barely made it through. I did get kicked out of the dorms for life. But I had 44 credits from RCC, and I think I managed to have about 32 or 4 from SOSC. Those were hard-earned. And I applied for the flight technology program in Central Washington in Everett. And I thought for sure I was going to get in. And I was 4 credits shy. I didn't get in. And that may have been the best thing that never happened. Because, hell, man, nobody would fly with me today. And there was a 2.5-year stint where I didn't even have a drink, and nobody would have flied with me in that 2.5 years either. But in pursuit of what was possible and where you could go and what you could do, things happen along the course of your life. Do you ever wonder, like, what if you wouldn't have met that one person during that one time? What would your life be like then? Had you not made this decision at that one time, or you would have made that decision at this one time, what would it be then? How could it have looked? The choices and the decisions that we made along the course of the timeline was wild. Before we knew it, I found myself back on the dairy farm, helping out. Dane was trying to keep it propped up. The DEQ had come in, and they had required us to reduce our herd in half. And they also said you have a year to put in a manure separating system, at that time to the tune of $150,000, and we can never increase the size of the herd. And with the move of reducing the herd, which we did, sold off the cows, and we didn't turn them into hamburger, we repurposed them, we had to lay off the help. So it's just the two of us for that last year. And we were meeting regularly with the DEQ, and we were trying to figure out how we could get extensions. And truthfully, at that time, it seemed like it was going to be like devastation for our family. The thing that we all cherished and loved, that we got to grow up with, that way of life that was so unique and so special. I could see how Dane wanted it for his kids. He was 38. I was 21. You know, if I was 21, that means Brant was 11. You only want the best for your kids. If you guys have kids, you only want, like, what is possible for them, and you hope that as they stumble and fall, they pick themselves back up and figure out a way to go forward, right? I think then, at that time, for him, it had to be very, very heavy. It had to be really complicated. I don't know what the conversations were like or the thoughts that he had, and the conversations, maybe most importantly, that he had with himself. But I knew at 21, for me, I'm like, well, I'm independent, and I'm still ready to go kick some ass And we talked about a lot of crazy wild business ideas. I thought, well, I could open an excavation business. I know how to operate a tractor pretty good. I can back a trailer better than anybody in the room still. Challenge y'all. But that just didn't seem quite right. I looked into it. I'll never forget going over to the place in Medford off of Biddle Road and screwing around with one of their backhoes and trying to figure out which one would be a better fit. And as I thought about it and as I prayed about it and as I dug down deep, I was like, you know, that's not what I want to do, man. When it's August and it's hot and when it's December and it's cold, that stuff's hard work. This business thing, man, I know I could do something unbelievable. And so as the sand in the hourglass evaporated with our time with the dairy farm, we had to make the decision to sell. And we were pushed into the decision because if we didn't, we were going to get fined $25,000 a month, and we just would have went bankrupt. So we sold the cows, which Dane had a portion of the herd. I think he had 60 of the cows, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $60,000. And I didn't have a whole hell of a lot. I think I had about 5-10. It ranged from 5 to 10 because I bet on football a lot. And I'd make trips to Reno and go gambling with Mike D. It was a crazy way. I mean, I'm 21, trying to figure out if I should buy a house. At that time, man, those decisions and choices, I never knew how much the impact they would have. Completely crushed my mom's spirit throughout my teenage years because all the decisions I made, I thought were just about me. I had no idea, and I didn't really understand when she'd tell me how they hurt her. I get it now. She said, one day you'll know. I get it. And I still have a lot to learn because my boys, right now they're 14, 12, 10, 8. 6 short years from now, man, they'll be 20, 18, 14, 16. It's going to be a trip. But the decisions, the choices along the course of our walk. I came to Dan and I said, dude, what are you going to do? He says, I'm going to go get a job, man. I think I'm going to go apply at Walmart or Fred Meyer. And I go, dude, don't do it. Don't do it, man. I mean, my brother had so much to give. He was just like this radiant, magnetic personality. It was just fun to hang out with him. I'm like, dude, you can do something else. Why don't we do that TCBY franchise? Why don't we do something that's like, you know, we can go have some fun with and you can see what happens. But it was like, you had to have a net worth of 500 grand. We're like, shit, man, we got 68 together. So, well, that isn't gonna work. So what about that baseball batting cage idea, dude, that we were talking about? Maybe we ought to do that. Yeah, well, that's like 150. Then one day I came down and said, dude, what if we open an espresso cart? He goes, what's espresso? I said, it's like, haven't you had like a mocha lattes, you know? And he's like, what? He never drank coffee in his life till he's 35. He started drinking out of necessity because, hell, we laid off all the help and we had to do all the work, so he tried to stay awake by drinking coffee. And it was like Folgers with flavor crystals and shit. You know, extra. And he put a ton of sugar in it and milk. It was wild. So he went to the bistro restaurant here in town that night and he noticed that they had espresso on the menu. After dinner, he said, hey, could you hook me up with an espresso, please? And they brought it out in a little short Demitasse cup with a little silver spoon and some packets of sugar. And he opened a couple packets of sugar, he mixed it up and he took a little slurp off it and he's like, whoa! I mean, it was bright, it was acidic, it had creme on it, it was stronger than shit. He just freaked out. He's like, dude, nobody's gonna buy this. Came home, he's like, dude, your rocks are cooked, man. I mean, espresso? I'm like, dude, get in the car. Just get in the car, we're gonna cruise down, I'm gonna get you a vanilla latte. And we went downtown into Grants Pass, we cruised over the Caveman Bridge, across from Bi-Mart, there was a little old lady named Bonnie working at her shop called Western Espresso with an X. And she was like kind of oaky. She was barefoot. She wore glasses. She had a big old smile. She had a single head machine, but she had organic Peruvian coffee. And she was like, hey, Trav, how you doing? I'm like, so good, Bonnie. It's so good to see you. She's like, Would you like your usual vanilla latte? Please, two today. I brought my brother Dane, and she's, oh, hey, Dane, nice to meet you. Dane's like, what? I mean, it was a Cracker Box, funky. I mean, it must have cost her $5,000 all in. So we got two vanilla lattes. I handed the one over to Dane, started on our way, and I look over, and Dane's got the lid off of his cup, and he's licking the milk foam off of it. He's like, dude, this is good, man. I'm like, yeah, that's the shit I'm talking about, dude. And from that moment, he was like, what do we got to do? How can we go make this happen? And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know, man, but, you know, I know that there's great coffee up in Eugene. There's great coffee in Portland. There's great coffee in Seattle. And he's like, you know, I have a friend of mine that I graduated with. He works for Boyd's Coffee. Do they have this espresso stuff? I'm like, yeah, I think so, man. I think so. Larry Winkler, Jordan Daniels' uncle. Hard to believe. You weren't even born yet. So we jumped in the car, bombed up to Boyd's, go visit with Larry. And Larry was cool. He had to wear a suit, and he came out, and he was rad. He's like, hey, man, I can introduce you to Gary Jacobs. He's our VP of sales, and he'll hook you up, but I got to go back to work. I don't want to get in trouble with the boss because they kind of, you know, run a tight ship around here, man. They're like, oh, cool, man. Good to see you, Larry. Nice to meet you, Gary. Gary's like, yeah, so what can I help you with? And I'm like, well, I want to get like maybe a two or a three group espresso machine. And, you know, we want a cart, we want a refrigerator. Well, where do you intend on taking this? I'm like, well, we're going to put it in Grants Pass at Fred Meyer. If we can put it in Fred Meyer, that would be epic. He's like, well, I know of some of those shops up here in Portland, and they don't do that great, you know. I'm like, well, all right, man. Can you just show us, like, what you have as far as options go, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, I think what would be ideal for you guys is this little setup. It's a single group on a cart, and it's got an ice chest with an umbrella. $10,000. We need something like, you know, can do some volume and stuff, man. Because, you know, I mean, I go through this little Cracker Box thing, and if there's two cars in line, man, it takes forever. Lady's super cool, though, man. You should check it out sometime. If you're ever down in Grants Pass, Bonnie, she's rad. Yeah, I've never heard of her. Okay. You know when people think you're nuts. You can tell he feels like you're just wasting his time. So, you know, we left there, kind of tail between the legs, frustrated, a little down. We're like, you know, that fucking sucked. That guy's just a dough bag. You know, he doesn't even get what we're after. I mean, what a douche. So we kept on. We went up to Seattle, came on back down the I-5 corridor, pounded tons of coffee. We're rocking Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, Cat Stevens, Chicago, all this kick-ass music from the 70s of my brother. He put Boston on, man, and it was just like flexing. You know, it was rad. It was in like hog heaven. We stop in Eugene. We went into this place called Full City Coffee. I don't even know if it's still there. The guy was in there. His name was Michael. He's supposed to be like wizard. It was like third wave feel. Kind of snooty, you know, I mean, we go in, we got our coffee, it was pretty good. Hey, yeah, you know, Michael, we really want to do this concept. He's like, well, what are you going to try and do it down in Galice down there? I mean, what, you know, I have to do like $1,000 a day or I don't make any money. We're like, wow, really? You got to do that much and you still don't make any money? What a nut. What kind of rent do you pay, man? I mean, we didn't jive with that dude either. But we went around the block. We stepped into Fifth Street Public Market. And the old Fifth Street Public Market, there it was, this place, Coffee Corner. And this hippie girl kind of comes up and she's like, hey guys. And we're like, yeah, how you doing? Somebody who gives a shit about somebody. She's like, can I make you something rad? And she hooked us up with these two, it was like, a sunny, sensational mocha. And I'm like, wow, it tasted extra good because the way she called it, what she did, and how she gave it to, I'm like, damn, dude, it's good. And so we were like, hey, so who can we talk to? oh, Paul Layton, he's our roaster. He's our owner. He's right across the street is his little roasting plant. Just cruise over there, pop in. He'd be more than happy to see you. We cruise in, there's Paul. And I mean, we got green coffee sacks everywhere. He's got a roaster that's smaller than the Giessen. He's got another one over in the corner. And he's got like coffee everywhere. Green coffee, roasted coffees, varietals. It's like a mad scientist guy sitting in there. He's got charts and he's got a pen. He's like, hey guys, how can I help you? I'm like, we're just trying to learn about coffee a little bit. He's like, oh, come on in, man. Here, let me hook you up. He gave us a cup of Kenya coffee. He goes, this is my favorite. It's bright, it's acidic. He was like super descriptive. He's like, how can I help you guys to do what you want? What are you trying to do? And he rolled out the red carpet. And had we not met Paul, I don't know the Dutch Bros would have happened. But we came to an agreement. He said, I'm gonna send 10 varietals down, 10 pound sacks. I'm gonna hook you guys up with a two group manual pull machine fired on propane. It's gonna have ultimate versatility so that you guys can take it to events, because I think you may want to do events sometime. You guys are kind of charismatic dudes. He had Birkenstocks on, he had this beard, he played the French horn. I'm like, what a nut. But he was passionate about coffee. He was like, it seemed to be like his life goal was the pursuit of the perfect cup. And we were mesmerized by our experience, and we drove home super ecstatic. Paul showed up a couple weeks later, taught us how to pull shots, taught us how to steam milk, put the cart in our old milk house, and we brought in the stereo system and a couch, and we just went hog wild for like 2 months. Straight up, like formulas, recipes, experiments. If I took a piss in the afternoon, it smelled like coffee. That's how much coffee I was drinking, man. It was like straight up, I was like, wow, dude, I'm probably not gonna sleep again. And finally, when we had got to a place of formulating some recipes, we had everything dialed except for the mocha. Thank God I had Dane in my life, because he had some business experience. He had a Dairy Queen franchise at the age of 22. So he knew what it was like to keep things simple and to make sure that we're fast and that we could develop some principles and values that would carry with us throughout the course of the whole venture. And he kept me in check on how crazy I wanted to take us. You know, and we went down to the liquor store. We robbed a DeKuyper logo. We took it to Staples or whatever it was at the time. I don't even know if it was Staples. Anyhow, we created our own little menu. It was simple, it was cool. And the mocha, we were battling over. We had the description. We knew what it was about. We knew what we wanted it to be. We knew how important it was gonna have to be. And we experimented with Mrs. Richards hot fudge, Nestle's quick, Hershey syrup, Guittard chocolate, Ghirardelli's chocolate. It was like anything and everything that we could find to experiment with that mocha. And finally, Dane was like, you know what, man? I'm gonna go down to Valley of the Rogue Dairy and go visit with Michaela's uncle, Andy, and her dad, Robert, and her other uncle, Tony, and their dad, Palmer. And I'm gonna just go see what they think about this thing. And he went down there and he came back with a case of Valley of the Rogue chocolate milk. And that chocolate milk, man, growing up in this town was the most epic thing you could ever want as a kid. Isn't that right, Diaz? Yeah, back in the day at Fort Minoy, we were drinking it. And I think they only had it like on Friday, and it was, you wish that you could get two. But it was creamier and it was richer, and the chocolatey flavor was like pleasurable to your palate. I think Andy would intentionally leave that valve open on the half and half to add that extra creamy texture. But we took it up, steamed it, poured it on our coffee, and it was like, this is it. It was fast, it was consistent, it didn't separate, and they had this special formula that we still use today in the mocha, and we set out. It's time to open shop. Fred Meyer was our quest. It's our first choice. We took our pictures, nice little presentation together. We sent it off to him and didn't hear anything. A week passed and I call him like, hey man, you know, this is Travis Boersma down here at Grants Pass, Oregon. We sent a presentation for you guys to review, and we're hopeful that you, yeah, we got that. Yeah. Like, oh, cool, right on. You know, is there any questions I can answer for you? Yeah, you know, we'll get to that when we get to it, and we'll call you, man. It's in the file. Okay, cool, man. Thank you. Click. Well, maybe in a week, we'll check back. So a week later, check back. Hey, yeah, we told you that we'd call you, man. You know, it may take some time. We were frustrated. We wanted them to just be super responsive. We thought we should be in there tomorrow. But after that, we decided we'll go to our second best location. Dane had a friend, Bill Rosnick, Jan's significant at the time. And we visited with Bill. He had the Town Center Plaza as the property manager with his company, 221 Property Management Services. And there was an old shaved ice shack there. And we knew that they had allowed people to be there historically. And Bill said, yeah, man, no problem. You guys can go there, set up, $150 a month. No problem. We're like, unbelievable. Cool. So we did. We set up shop. That first day, we had a storage shed right behind us. We were ready to go. It was bright and early. 7 o'clock, we were going to open. And Dane went into the storage shed, and he's like, dude, I don't know if I can do it. I'm like, what? What are you talking about, man? We're finally here. It's game time, dude. And I go, hang on a minute. Let me go make you a mocha. I'm going to put some music on. We'll get in the zone, dude. It'll be great. Made a little single 8-ounce mocha. I put Led Zeppelin on, and I rotated around over the storage shed. I go, here, dude, everything's going to be cool. Let's just cruise out here, man. I mean, pretty soon people are going to be cruising by, going to get their mail. And we stepped out. And Dane had this big grin on, and people started parking their cars and walking by and looking at us, and they'd kind of go and walk on over to the post office. And then they'd walk back to their car, and they'd look at us again. And it was the weirdest feeling on the planet. So after about, I don't know, half a dozen people that did that, I was like, hey, how you doing, man? Because it was just too weird to not say anything, just look at each other, right? And they'd go, pretty good. I go, right on. And after I did that about 4 times, I'm like, shit, man, are we going to sell anything? I mean, I got to figure out how we're going to sell something, right? And so the next person walks by, and I, hey, how you doing, man? They go, pretty good. I go, hey, why don't you go get your mail, and I'll have something unbelievable ready for you when you get back. You can check it out. I've got a little mocha that I want to send your way, and maybe you could tell me what you think about it. He's like, okay, all right. Kind of looked at me weird. He came back and I said, hey, I got it ready for you here, right here, man. It's a short little concoction of espresso coffee, and it's got Valley of the Rogue chocolate in it, man. This is gonna get your motor running all day long, and you won't have to drink office coffee for the rest of the day, because I'm sure you have to make like pots of that stuff throughout. I'm like, really? They go, wow, this is pretty good. They took off. All of a sudden, there was a couple sales that happened. People were stopping by. We had some friends and family that came down, made it look kind of like it was busy. They're like, hey, you gotta stay here, man. Don't leave. We gotta look kind of busy. We were robbing power off the Rush Limbaugh billboard sign that was the old KLDR sign, and it was right there. We thought that was super slick. And after the day had passed, we broke out the total, and we did $65. And we paid for our rent, we paid for our product, and we turned a profit, which was better than we'd done at the dairy in years. So I'll leave it there.